For years, a good business climate has come to be defined by a few simple things: low taxes, minimal regulation, less unionization. Here's former Governor Scott Walker making the case for a plan to cut taxes as a 2014 event with Wisconsin's largest business lobbying group.
If you want to keep the economic recovery going, if you want to keep the ball rolling forward, if you want to put more people to work and enhance the economy and create more opportunity in this state, if you want to make people better in Wisconsin, the best way to do that, to truly stimulate the economy, isn't to keep more money in Madison. It's to put it in the hands of the hardworking taxpayers, the consumers and employers of the state.
Our next guest says there are few things businesses today care about more than taxes, like having access to a pool of highly skilled workers. We want to hear from you at 800-642-1234. Join our conversation. As an employee, what sorts of things do you look for when you're deciding where to live and work? Have you ever not taken a job because you didn't like where it was based? Call 800-642-1234, or you can email us at ideas@wpr.org. Steve Deller is a regional economist and a professor in UW-Madison's Department of Agricultural and Applied Economics. He's the author of a recent report looking at the changing definition of a good business climate. Steve, welcome back.
Good afternoon.
Help us understand how we've traditionally thought of what constitutes a good business climate.
This perspective. It one goes back 50, 60, even 70 years ago. What businesses were looking for was essentially...
Hey, Steve, I'm going to go ahead and jump in here, and we'll see if we can get the connection better. But you're breaking up to the point that we can't quite understand you. So we'll make this better in just a moment. We're talking with Steve Deller, who's a regional economist, and he's written this recent report looking at the changing definition of a good business climate. So we'll talk about what we've traditionally thought of and what the evidence that Steve Deller has shown is changing when it comes to what we're thinking about. You are part of this conversation. So there's a line for you at 800-642-1234. Maybe you're a business owner. What sorts of things do you need for your business to thrive? What challenges have you run into doing business that you wish you could change? Are those traditional ideas of low taxes and less regulation what really sets your business up for success? Or do you think that higher regulations might actually help? Give us a call at 800-642-1234, or you can post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. And Steve, can you hear us now?
Yes, I can. Sorry about
that. Oh, great. No worries. It's easy to switch, and technology is always, up in the air for us. So let me ask you again, what have we traditionally thought of as good business climate?
If we're thinking about the economy 50 years ago, 60 years ago, then things like lower taxes, lower rates of unionization, fewer environmental regulations seem to make sense. The thing is that the economy has fundamentally changed over the past 50 years, and what businesses are looking for now has really changed. Access to skilled labor, access to quality of life, access to things that make the business owners' life more pleasant, like good schools to send your kids to. So it's really kind of we need to rethink what a business climate means today, given today's economy, not the economy of 50 years ago.
And you say not the economy of 50 years ago, but really this idea of the what a successful business climate needs extends decades before that.
Oh, it does. You can trace it back to the Mississippi Balancing Agriculture and Industry Act of 1933. They kind of laid the gambit down in terms of they were trying to recruit manufacturing firms from the northern states to move down to Mississippi. And their selling point was cheap labor, cheap taxes, no regulations, and no unions. And that was kind of they laid the gauntlet down. And a lot of states felt as though they needed to respond, and they responded relative to what old school manufacturers were looking for. That was, back in the Great Depression. The economy's fundamentally changed. So what was relevant 50, 60, 70 years ago isn't really relevant today.
So what are some of the ways you've seen public policy in Wisconsin shaped around this traditional view of what we need for successful economies?
I think that there's been a fundamental change with the change of administration in the governor's office. Under the Walker administration, it was very old school. It was that, again, economy of 50 years ago. But under the new administration, there's been a shift towards less so of a focus on the legacy industries in Wisconsin. They're not being ignored, but less of a focus on the legacy industries and more of a focus on business startups and entrepreneurship. There is a tremendous amount of research that has pretty much, it's not a question, it's pretty much a proven fact, as much as you can have a fact in economics, that the engine of economic growth is not really existing businesses, it's new business formation. So with the new administration, there's been a shift of the Wisconsin Economic Development Corporation a little bit more towards we need to focus on business startups. Now, this is where it comes in to, you know, what are the preferences of the person that's starting the business? A lot of times people make a decision, you know, where do they want to live, and that's where they start their business. That's a very fundamentally different perspective of simply cutting taxes for the sake of cutting taxes.
And you say that things have shifted some, but I think the easiest example for us to grasp onto is Foxconn. I mean, this gubernatorial administration is still working with Foxconn, and Foxconn really, the deal was brokered under the Walker administration, and Foxconn had a lot of incentives, tax-wise, money-wise, to come to Wisconsin. And your argument in this is that that doesn't really work.
It doesn't work. Foxconn did not work. Foxconn is a shadow of what they proposed they were going to do. That, again, is kind of old school thinking. What we need to be focusing on less is trying to recruit businesses to Wisconsin. Businesses just don't pick up and move that much. The research is pretty clear that the engine of growth is entrepreneurship. Why would people want to start a business in Wisconsin? We don't really see a lot of businesses moving around. Those that do move tend to be pretty small, and they move less than 10 miles. So a lot of times what we see when we, you know, we trace this throughout the 2000s and up into about 2015, we traced firm movement in Wisconsin, and less than 3% of firms move in a given year. And those that do move tend to have less than 10 employees, and what they're doing is they're moving across town. So this idea of trying to recruit manufacturing firms or big businesses like a Foxconn is really a misuse of the limited resources that we have. What we should be focusing on, rather, is creating an entrepreneurial ecosystem, if you will. Why would people want to start businesses in Wisconsin, and what can we do to help them get started? When we think about it that way, the notion of a business climate really kind of fundamentally shifts. We start thinking about quality of life. We start thinking of access to finance. We start thinking about access to quality labor. And tax rates really don't matter. Businesses will tell you that taxes do matter, but when you watch what they actually do, taxes don't matter that much.
We have Emmanuel in Kenosha on the line at 800-642-1234. Welcome to Central Time, Emmanuel.
Hi, good afternoon. Thanks for taking my call. I'm in the trucking business. I'm an independent trucker. And so I kind of live and work wherever I want. And so I was hoping to get feedback from your guest on a couple of other issues that I see as hugely problematic in this business, including in Wisconsin. The first being that I don't believe that less regulation or fewer taxes are necessarily a good thing in this business, but perhaps what your guest could comment on is the fact that there's very little enforcement of the rules. So those of us who are small and try to play by the rules constantly find ourselves shouting in the wind, so to speak, because those who cheat, the government doesn't have the resources, state police forces particularly don't have the resources to be out here enforcing the most basic of laws, like speeding, You know, I don't speed. So the guy who speeds is literally cheating me out of money every mile.
Emmanuel, I want to jump in here because I want Steve to be able to comment on your situation, because what I hear in Emmanuel's comment there is that small businesses or independent workers, they struggle against a system.
I think there's an excellent point there. Regulations in and of themselves are not necessarily bad. Actually, regulations can help, because it removes a certain amount of uncertainty. It's essentially establishing the rules of the game. So when the regulations are there, right, it kind of helps the independents like Emmanuel to essentially say, what can I do or what can't I do? Okay. Now, what drives businesses nuts is when the regulations are arbitrarily changed or they're arbitrarily enforced. Okay, that doesn't mean that, you know, sometimes we get the regulations wrong. I mean, you know, people develop these regulations and people make mistakes. So we need to constantly be going in and refining the rules of the game, if you will. But when those rules are arbitrarily changed or they're arbitrarily enforced, that drives businesses nuts. One of the things, Madison, for example, has had a reputation of having a poor business climate. And the reason for that is that the city council is constantly changing their mind. So they've put in a set of regulations, and then the following year, we changed our mind, and they changed the regulations. Those types of things drive businesses nuts. Or they see that my competitor, my neighbor here, who's in the same business as I am, they're getting away with not following the rules. The rules are not being enforced consistently. So there are certain elements around regulations that we need to do a better job of.
Emmanuel,
simply cutting them to cut them is not a good idea.
We are talking about the shifting definition of a good business climate here on the Ideas Network. This is Central Time. I'm Keeley Boltina. Economist Steve Deller is with us for the conversation, and we want to hear from you at 800-642-1234. Are there amenities like good schools or being close to nature that are requirements for a place you would be willing to live and work? Or are there some you would compromise on to take a job in a new place? Maybe you're a small business owner or a large business owner. What do you need for your business to be successful? Give us a call at 800-642-1234 or email ideas@wpr.org. Steve, in 2019, Amazon pulled out of plans to locate some of its operations in New York. That was after public pushback that was in part about labor unions not wanting the company to fight efforts to unionize there. Does that show us that some of those traditional factors in a business climate actually do matter?
You know, actually, the research does seem to suggest that companies will tend to avoid states with high rates of unionization. That the research is suggesting that. But if you get a little bit deeper, it's a little bit more subtle than simply unions are bad. It depends on the relationship between the union and management. For example, when Volkswagen had their assembly plant in Tennessee voting to go union, the company actually wanted the workforce to go union, because the German tradition is that the union and management are kind of part of a team. The labor kind of realizes that, hey, as the company goes, we go. So they work together. Now, if unions are able to play that role and essentially say we are part of the management team and working together, unions can actually be a positive. Now, if unions, are, on the other hand, are militant and are very confrontational with the company, then that can be bad. An example of that is the relationship of the labor union with Caterpillar in central Illinois. That was a very confrontational relationship, and that really tarnished the state of Illinois from a manufacturer's perspective. So it depends. It's not just having a union by itself is not necessarily bad. It's how does that union work with the company? If they're partners, it can be a positive thing. If they're adversaries, then yes, it is true. Unions can be bad.
We We've got Owen in Wauwega who wants to join this conversation. Hey, Owen.
Hello.
Hi there. What's on your mind?
Hi, Keely. Hey, I've got a couple points here. My first point is this, you know, as a young person, a young entrepreneur, just trying to access a labor force that has the ability to purchase an affordable home and pay a mortgage is really tough in Wisconsin, especially closer to metropolitan areas. And even in the rural areas, there's just so much land that's not available for smaller first-time homeowners to purchase and afford to pay a mortgage that would be within their means. That makes it really tough for a new business to feel comfortable coming to Wisconsin because they know that a motivated labor force is going to be the labor force that has a few things that they're really concerned about. And one of them is paying a mortgage. The second would be a family. And the third thing that I wanted to focus on was young entrepreneurs or beginning business entrepreneurs. We have a lot of things that are stacked against us right now because we've subsidized so many of the larger corporations in such a macro scale that the small independent businesses have really not been able to compete against the large corporate structures that exist here in the state that have been given massive amounts of Paycheck Protection Loan and other small business loan contributions this last year and a half. And I've watched my business suffer as a result of that. Even though my Google reviews are 5-star, the competitors that I have been able to outdo me in advertising and able to purchase land and facilities because they had been given a lot of money through the federal government.
Owen, thank you so much for sharing what you've experienced with your business. And Steve, let's take that last point about large businesses getting large subsidies. What do you hear?
I think that that's partially true, and that's part of the old school thought of business with a positive business climate. Basically, what's good for General Motors is good for America. There's still a lot of that mindset. The other thing, too, is that there's a lot of programs that are available to small businesses. The problem, though, is getting access to those programs. Sometimes larger firms have the staff to be able to go in and take advantage of those programs, whereas your smaller business owners don't have the expertise, if you will, to be able to go in and get that. And I think that's something the WDC is working on very seriously, is trying to address that disconnect. And I think that's important. Now, one thing that was brought up was housing. This is something that Wisconsin is really struggling with, is housing. And it, a lot of communities got to the housing issue kind of through a labor shortage. They were kind of saying, and this is all pre-COVID, is that we've got these jobs. Why aren't people moving to the community to take these jobs? And they got the housing as the issue. Housing was the bottleneck. But as communities started thinking about it, they kind of started thinking and shifting and saying, well, what can we do to make our community more attractive so that people would want to live here? And they've kind of shifted away from focusing solely on businesses and kind of thinking about what's called placemaking. How can we make this a better place for people to live? And once they move here, start their businesses here. So it's a complete kind of shifting of how we think about fostering economic development.
Brandy wrote on the Ideas Network Facebook page, she says there are plenty of businesses hiring right now, but their pay stinks and their benefits stink. The whole get a better job doesn't work when there aren't better jobs. What do you have to say to Brandy?
That is true. Looking at the labor shortage, right, there's several things that are driving the labor shortage, okay? And we're talking about it now. What we're doing is we're kind of getting back to where we were before COVID. We're still facing the same labor shortage issues, and it's multifaceted. But one of them simply is pay scale. People used to think that something like a $15 an hour job was a pretty good paying job. Not in reality. As a lot of communities have worried about their housing situation, they're starting to realize that a $15 an hour job, even a $20 an hour job, given the housing market, is not a very good job. So it's really getting folks rethinking what we mean by economic development.
And as we look forward, we just have about a minute left, and I'm wondering where you think we can go to kind of match public policy with these ideas of what we really need in a business climate. Where do we start?
I think that the real kind of long-term impact is at the local level, because these
are kind of, you know, we're making investments today that may not have a payoff for 5-10 years, okay? But those payoffs will be very sustainable and very impactful. What the state can do is really how can they better facilitate that? How can they be a better partner for these local efforts?
Yeah.
And I think that that's one of the things that the new administration is trying to do is how can the state be a better partner rather than simply saying we're the only game in town and it's basically our way.
Stephen Deller, a regional economist and professor at UW-Madison. You heard him here on Central Time.